Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Collision. We'll get some. So, Mike, we have Battle Chance going on again. CM Punk in New Jersey getting booed. Then there's some chants. Then the boos rise up again. And then you got Ricky Starks, who turned heel, saying, I'm not going to apologize for cheating. And the fans cheering him and loving him and kind of like, Tony, lay off. You know, we like Ricky. And then Punk comes out, and it's like more of a mixed reaction for both. And they get in the ring. We get the same thing. Is this desirable? Is this fun? Is this good? Or, as we sort of saw with the FTR promo, does it get a little complicated when babyfaces are facing basically a popular heel in MJF and a popular duo right now in MJF and Cole? We'll address that specifically later, but is there too much of that going on, and is Punk and Starks an example of that? Would it be just better if Starks could find a way to get people to boo him and Punk could win everyone over? Or is that unrealistic to always expect that? AEW is really not to blame because, you know, outside things happened, and they're just turning this into a fun situation where there's interesting wrestlers who people care passionately about. They just don't all agree.
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, like you said, you wouldn't be having this. If Tony had his ideal situation play out the way that he, I think, would have liked to see it play out on June 17th, I think, which was the day Collision debuted and Punk came back, I think, you know, looking back here a month later, he probably would hope that he was in a different situation, but it is kind of just a matter of the circumstances that they find themselves in, right? And I think he's trying, it comes across as he's trying to make the best he can out of the situation that he's been dealt with, which probably didn't go exactly according to plan.
Yeah, like, what do you think he would have liked tonight to have gone like? And how do you think he feels about the way it went? I don't think it was a disaster for Punk and Starks, because everybody loves Darby. And by the way, Darby was a key component to getting fans to kind of, if they weren't sure, to lean towards Punk, because when Darby entered the ring and then walked over to Punk and said, my good friend CM Punk, or paraphrasing, maybe it was that was exactly what he said, I think that fans are like, well, we like Darby, and if Punk's good enough for Darby, maybe he is good enough for us. And then you got Christian, who's such a good heel right now. I mean, I'm not going to say heel of the year without a lot more thought and more, you know, more contributions in regards to the context of AEW. But when you look at AEW and MJF playing babyface, you have the Blackpool Combat Club, who are sort of miscast as heels. Like, Christian is, we'd have to look at a list and have a larger discussion, but he's doing heel of the year style work on the mic, in the ring. When we saw Jeff Jarrett getting a lot of ring time, he's using the old bag of tricks. You know, we have a generation of wrestlers who are trying to acquire stars and fight for every chance. And then you got people like Christian and Jarrett who are like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get the crowd emotionally invested in the action in the ring, and by telling stories and being devious and dastardly and timing things out. Christian, again, putting on a clinic in that way. And so that kind of helped sides, because everybody loves Darby, everybody hates Christian, or they love to boo him, kind of in a Dominic type way, I guess. You know, even though he's twice Dominic's age. So in that sense, it there were aspects of the match that totally worked. So I going full circle back to my original question, how do you think Tony feels about how this all played out?
I feel like it's not, it didn't go exactly to plan. I think his initial plan, as we saw on the return on the Collision debut, was that Punk would come back, he'd be cheered, he'd be the number one babyface, and that would be the ideal world for him. He'd be the number one babyface on the show. It does seem like he's still trying to get people there. The crowd's not exactly cooperating, but he's trying to get people there.
By being a good sport.
Yes. Yeah.
And that's part of it. He's just like, yeah, it's a good sport. He's not feeding. I mean, he took a few shots, but, you know, he's a Blackhawks fan. You can take a shot at the local NHL team and people go, well, that's a Blackhawks fan. That's not a guy who really hates us.
Yes. And then, and it was interesting too, because like that's where the promo started that way. So my initial reaction was, wow, this is going in a different direction than I expected. Is this a breadcrumb leading to somewhere? Is this, you know, where exactly is this going? And then it completely flips back to the original plan, I think, of Punk as the babyface, when, like you said, Darby Allin comes out and says whatever he said, my good friend CM Punk, whatever that line was.
Yeah.
It very clearly defined that, okay, no, Punk and Darby are together, you know, in this scenario, however it's going to play out. And, of course, we saw that it played out in the form of the tag team match in the main event. But there was that brief moment at the very beginning where they at least seemed to be willing to play along with it and let the crowd maybe get some of those boos out of their system. And maybe that's what it was. You know, him, Tony trying to give the crowd a chance to – the people that want to boo CM Punk, here's a reason to boo him, but then we're going to kind of flip quickly go back to what our originally intended idea was, and that's you're going to have to be on his side with Darby against Ricky Starks and Christian.
So what's the trajectory for Starks and Punk? Let's start with Punk. Is tonight a step in the direction of maybe, especially now that fans are kind of realizing, we're not doing Punk and FTR against Kenny and the Bucks, at least not anytime soon. I mean, that's in the back pocket. You can always play it. But genuinely, Kenny and the Bucks don't want to do it. And I just don't know that Tony wants to push the issue. And I think that would be, you know, people would be, it would be an amazing and compelling match, but I don't like to see matches where guys are wrestling each other who really, really don't like each other and don't want to be working with each other. And I think Kenny and the Bucks are in that spot right now. So, you know, as much as we can conjure up a scenario that maybe isn't connected to reality, where that would be a great match because you can play into it like it's more real than everything else, because unlike all the other fake arguments and heat between wrestlers, this is real and we like that better. That doesn't do it for me. I just want to get wrapped up in a good show. I don't need one match on a show to be more real than the others. That doesn't enhance my enjoyment of a worked wrestling match. I think that's actually kind of silly. So to me, it seems like fans maybe are getting more used to the notion that Punk's going to be over on Collision and Kenny and the Bucks and Moxley and even Jericho and Hangman are going to be on Dynamite and some others are going to float. And you know what? Let's just enjoy Punk. Is Punk on a trajectory? The more that becomes a reality and the less this becomes about take sides, because at a big show coming up, there's going to be, you know, the Elite against Punk, CMFTR, as the t-shirt says. If that isn't in the cards, do people just sort of lighten up and go, well, now that we're not having to take sides, we're going to just start cheering Punk because he's matched up against good heels. Are we on that trajectory or are we on a different trajectory, a more Cena situation where it just becomes fun to sit in an audience and be part of a small group that's cheering for Punk and try to irritate a group right next to you who are in the opposite camp?
I think he could be on the trajectory of being the number one babyface on Collision and being the guy that is completely separated from the Elite, and therefore, you know, the people that are still kind of tied up in that and have been over the last month will eventually forget about it. I think they can get him on that trajectory, but the key is, like you just said, he needs to be matched up against good heels. I think he can be on that trajectory if he's up against Christian, because Christian's been so good as a heel. If you put him into a situation where there's an opportunity for the people that are anti-Punk to boo him, I think that those things will start to catch on. For example, like right now, given what MJF is doing with Adam Cole, until MJF turns on Cole, if that's the end result here, until that happens, you can't put Punk and MJF in the same ring together right now if you want CM Punk to be the babyface. Like, it's just not going to happen.
Or if you want MJF to be the heel.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, you've got to – there's a way to get him on that trajectory, but you've got to match him up against really strong heels. And they've got a couple, like Christian being one, that I think they can do that with. And even Ricky Starks. There's a segment of the audience that clearly wants to – cheer Ricky Starks and are into what he's doing, but if he keeps on winning with grabbing onto the ropes, if that becomes a thing, and he keeps cheating to win matches and then gloating about it, like I do think that he can get the people to turn on him in the way that a good heel should. But the key with Punk is he needs to be against really, really strong heels right now, because if not, I don't think they're going to get the babyface reaction that it still seems Tony wants to get with him.
Yeah, I answered my questions. I think Tony wants Punk cheered by, you know, 98% of the fans, if not 100. And anything less than that is job not done. You know, that the goal is, and obviously having teaming with Darby is sending a message to the audience. We don't want him to be a tweener. We're not trying to, you know, position him as someone who might turn. There's nothing Punk is doing right now other than the shot at the local NHL team that isn't, I'm a good sport about fans who are booing me, but I'm not going to sell it otherwise. I'm going to smile, go, hey, you're reacting. That's fine. But he wrestled as a babyface. He was yanked off the ring apron by Starks and chased him down when there was a hot take coming Darby's way. Christian and Starks can't get on the same page half the match. They're being heels. They're cheating. They're double-teaming. They're doing all the things that heels do. Punk's not doing any of that. He's not doing anything that dirty. He even had a chance to grab the rope in that first roll-up at the beginning of the match as a way to go, hey, Ricky, I can play that game too. And he didn't. Now, I mean, I'm not saying that was, like, advisable, but just if wrestling were real, Punk would be able to justify doing that. Hey, look, I just grabbed onto the rope and got a pin on you or scored in your fall. How do you like it, you know, when the tables are turned? He didn't do that. Like, he's fighting honorably. He's fighting in a way that you would typically see a babyface fight. So, you know, if he stays on this course and also I think he's having good matches. Like, I think he's getting his legs under him, his cardio. You know, I just think so far so good in terms of his in-ring work, so far so good in terms of promos, so far so good in terms of seeming like a stable, grounded, sane person, which was, you know, like, it didn't seem like that would be the case. Even with that first promo, you're like, is this just going to be constant? Like, you know, just, and it's like, no, it seems like he's in a good place. And frankly, from what I'm hearing, he is in a good place. Like at Collision, and I reported this on pwtorch.com a couple weeks back, you know, the reviews for him are good. He's being a veteran locker room leader. There's not drama. He's taking pride in the fact that there's not drama like there was in the other locker room. It's motivating him, I'm guessing, to have a locker room that doesn't have drama, because that sort of sends a message to fans. Punk wasn't the problem. The Elite will have their time to rebut that argument. But nevertheless, that's the case Punk can make. And so, yeah, just part of winning over the fans is kind of, you know, what they say, no Obama, oh drama. Obama was sort of a thing, you know. Barack Obama, President Obama, just didn't want a lot of drama around him. It's serious business here. Let's do our business. And that's kind of what Punk is like, no drama Punk. It doesn't have a ring to it. But that seems to be how he's approaching his job right now.
Yeah, I think the easy way out, the easy road for him right now would be to just say, look, I'm just going to lean into being a heel. Like, clearly people want to boo me, so yeah. I'm just going to lean into being a heel and go to Tony and say, look, Tony, look, I know it's not what we wanted to do. I know it wasn't the intended plan, but I'm a heel. Clearly the people want me as a heel. Let's just go with it. That would be the easy way out. And it seems like, you know, I could almost see if he's being that veteran locker room leader backstage, where this could be a fun challenge for him too, where, hey, I'm challenged to get these people back on my side, right? Because that was one of the things he talked about, even if you go back 10 years ago, when he left WWE, and I think he even talked about it in that infamous Colt Cabana podcast, where he didn't, you know, really feel challenged anymore. It was like, well, what's next? Okay, so I'm going to lose to Brock at SummerSlam, and then what? He's going to go home, and I'm still going to be here. Like, it was always about, and he had talked about, I think, in that interview, how there was no challenge left. Like, he felt like he had reached the top that he was going to reach to, and there was nowhere else he could go. And in this situation, I mean, look, he's been to the top of the company. He's been the world champion twice, technically. He wasn't able to have a run because of those injuries, but I can see where somebody in his position, and just someone with his general mindset, from what we do know about him and from interviews and things like that, where this would be a fun challenge to him to say, hey, I am motivated and challenged to get 100% of the people back on my side again, even though it's not going to be easy.
How about on the Stark side of things? What does it take, not just in relation to Punk, but just in general, to get a wrestler who fans like? I mean, there's sort of an LA Knight aspect to him. You know, he's confident. There's a spring in his step. He's got this he exudes charisma, sort of a high life, you know, living the high life, you know, enjoying nice things, but doing so in a way where you're sort of like, I want to live vicariously through him. There's a little bit of that with LA Knight, a lot of that. And then there's that with Ricky, and, you know, you got absolute Ricky Starks and other things he does. He doesn't quite have the array of signature catchphrases that fans are chanting that LA Knight does, but there's some of that in him. I don't know how you feel about that comparison, but WWE can't keep LA Knight a heel. And with Starks, there is a headwind to getting fans to boo him. What did they do tonight that you liked and didn't like in that regard? And is there anything you would tweak, augment, eliminate or add to Starks's act based on what seems like it would fit his act to get him more solidly booed? Because not getting along with Christian is not a good way to get there. You know, I mean, fans are like, well, if you and Christian are best friends, we'll boo you. Kind of like if you're best friends with Darby, Punk will cheer you. They couldn't get on the same page. That sort of made Starks, again, a little sympathetic, except, of course, when he was in there with Darby. So, yeah, your thoughts on Starks.
Yeah, it's a little Jekyll and Hyde, right? Because, like you said, they had the moment where he's aligns himself with Christian at the very beginning of the show and seemed okay with it. You know, when that was the match that got set up, he didn't seem upset, like, oh, I've got a team with this guy. He seemed okay with it, almost like he was excited about it. So that was in contrast to later on when he's not really getting along with Christian. But then the night ends with him grabbing the rope to cheat and steal yet again another win. So there is kind of a little bit of a back and forth here where I feel like they just have to commit to going with him as a heel if that's what they want to do. I mean, they seem committed to going with Punk as a face. They seem uncommitted to going all in with Ricky as a heel.
And I don't, I'm not sure that they aren't committed. I just don't know if Ricky can like help himself or if
maybe that's it. Yeah.
Or has, if he has that, like, kind of, these are the three or four things that I need to lean in on to get heel heat. And these are the two things that kind of win over the fans that I have to augment, twist, or eliminate in order to not get the fans who are just teetering and wanting to cheer me to keep cheering me. And, you know, whatever those are, there might be some favorite things he does that he has to take out, at least for a while, and then find a way to reintroduce it, whether it's walking the top rope and doing so with, you know, some of the showmanship that fans kind of like. It's like I talked about Bianca Belair, like so much of her heel act in NXT didn't change at all when she was framed as a hero to little girls and everybody as a lead babyface act on the main roster. And I'm like, I think there's more potential for her if she's not talking braggadociously about being the ESD and doing the same kind of mannerisms on her way to the ring and that kind of thing. Like, I just genuinely think there's a better way to frame Bianca Belair's obvious charisma and talent and appeal than to have her basically continue doing everything she did as a heel but asking fans to cheer it. That is what I'm worried about with Ricky. Is he, as a heel, going to be doing a lot of the things that drew people to him as a babyface? And that takes a hard conversation with maybe somebody who, you know, objectively a veteran coach or wrestler, maybe Christian, just sit him down and go, I'm watching your stuff. And this is what I'm noticing is getting people to cheer you. And these are the things that I think you can lean into to get them to boo you. And I would advise that. I think Stark's goal should be, just as Punk's goal is to be cheered, I think Stark's goal should be turn away every fan. And don't do it through cheap, localized insults. You know, oh, New Jersey, you're smelly. Like, no, like find something that's universal in every city, inconsistent. Don't go to the low-hanging fruit that, you know, works at house shows but shouldn't be on national TV.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's where I think he can lean into some of the veterans that are on that side of the roster, whether it's Punk or whether it's Christian, whether even if it's somebody like Miro who's been around for a while. There is a lot of experience on that show, and that's where he's predominantly been featured. And it seems as if that's where he'll continue to be prominently featured. So that would be something I would hope that he is doing. And it's something that I would hope, you know, if Punk is becoming a leader on that side of the locker room, it's something that honestly he should be doing as well. Because look, there was no better heel than CM Punk when CM Punk was the best heel in the business a decade ago. There was no better heel. So he definitely could share some with Ricky Starks on how to be that type of guy.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's pause and formally introduce the show. We're pretty deep into it here, but we'll let people know who we are and what we're doing. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, July 22nd, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, the host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of a number of podcasts throughout the week, including VIP exclusives such as the Wade Keller Hotline with insider exclusives, sometimes narrative-breaking insider news, and analysis of the top stories of the day, and then also the VIP exclusive Everything with Rich and Wade, where Rich Van and I get together and talk current events in wrestling, and also The Fix with Todd Martin, a 3 or 4 hour show that we record every Thursday with current events discussions and the astounding and amazing mailbag, and also post PLE roundtables. Along with that, I host a variety of free shows, including the weekly flagship edition of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast. That's our blue logo show, available when you search Wade Keller in your podcast app. And this is our red show, where I do 4 shows per week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturday, covering Raw, Dynamite, SmackDown, and Collision. And we welcome you, our listeners, to be part of those shows by streaming the show live. There is a link to the live stream available in my TV reports at pwtorch.com. At the top and bottom, there's a link to the live stream. You can also call in and listen if that's easier. That also includes the email address to email your thoughts on the show. And when you do call, if you push 1, that tells us you want to be on the show, and we'll bring you on to talk about the show. The other voice you hear so far is Mike McMahon. He's the co-host tonight. He is also a podcaster with PW Torch on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup. His focus now with Andrew Socek is AEW, going back a ways. They also had a focus on Impact. They also talk about other things like showers and trivia, bar soap versus – okay. So, Mike, welcome. It's always good to have you on.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me back. Yeah, we talk about everything, about wrestling and life everything. Everything's on the table. Our pets, Andrew's cats, my dogs, everything.
Yes. So people can find that show. Just search PW Torch in your podcast app. Apple Podcast. Stitcher's going away in a month, so find a new one that you love. But whatever podcast app you use, just search PW Torch. You'll see a couple shows pop up. The Daily Cast, it's a different show every day of the week, different themes, different focuses. And then also the charcoal-colored show is the PW Torch VIP free sample feed. And if you're using Apple Podcasts, you can use your Apple account and upgrade within that app or within that podcast feed and get all our VIP shows. And it'll just be charged the monthly fee to your Apple account on your iPhone. So it's the most frictionless way to get all of our shows, the free ones with the ads and plugs removed, and the VIP exclusive ones also, all on one convenient feed in Apple Podcasts, easily accessible, charged to your Apple account. There's a three or four day free trial period too, if you go that route. If you're interested in getting the shows along with access to our ad-free website and our archives, then it's best to go to pwtorch.com/govip and look at all the options. You can sign up with PayPal or credit card or debit card. And also have compatibility, by the way, with Apple Podcasts, but you just don't pay through the Apple account if you take that route. And then we also offer subscriptions through Patreon. Again, full details on all the options is at pwtorch.com/govip. 35 years of access to Pro Wrestling Torch newsletters chronicling professional wrestling history with breaking news, my cover stories, hard-hitting editorials, long-form insider Torch talks with some of the biggest names in pro wrestling, Q&A interview format, and so much more. Pay-per-view results, pay-per-view roundtables. You'll lose yourself in our archives. And then hundreds of retro radio shows from the 90s, including my KFAN radio show from back in the 90s with big-name guests and live caller formats and journalist roundtables. And then our podcast starting back in 2003 on demand and also offered throughout the week on our VIP feed on our kind of 18 years ago anniversary dates of some of our earliest podcasts on our main feed. So lots of benefits to going VIP. Check out details. Oh, and an ad-free version of our pwtorch.com, which is also nice with bonus content. pwtorch.com/govip. All right, so plug over. Let's give out the phone number and email one more time. We'd love to hear from you. 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1. That'll flag you so we know you want to be on the show. Otherwise, the email is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, so we have a lot more to talk about, the overall vibe of the show and specific newsworthy happenings in terms of matches announced and set up and matches themselves that took place on the show. But we'll let our first caller of the show, Hendrick from Portland, again, he was number one yesterday too, lead the way with what he wants to talk about next. Hendrick, welcome to the show. What's on your mind about Collision tonight?
Well, I mean, LA Knight really isn't getting pushed that hard, so I don't know what else to say. No. Anyways, that was yesterday. I'm really impressed with CM Punk, quite honestly. I was very leery of what's going on with this Collision thing and CM Punk being, like, the top guy. But he has done an amazing job. And if you would, like, ask me before, I'm way more Team Elite than I am CM Punk. Just because of the circumstances and whatnot. And I kind of watched the whole Elite thing grow up in my face. But is CM Punk gonna be good enough of a draw to keep the show on Collision.
To keep, I didn't understand the end of it. Is he going to be a big enough draw to what?
So, I mean, it's just like, he is a top guy, but, I mean, is this working?
Is the roster deep enough? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we're on a course, Hendrick, to find out. I mean, viewership-wise, 580,000 2 weeks ago, 575 last week. We might have found a water level. It was a little risky this week not announcing that Punk would be in action ahead of time and setting up the main event tag match during the show and, you know, announcing certainly less of a robust lineup than the previous 2 weeks. I expect viewership to drop this week, Mike. I don't think it'll drop a ton. I think the shows have been good enough that, you know, the 570 or 80,000 people watching, I don't know that a ton are going to drop off because they know Punk's on every week. You know, they're going to figure he's going to be part of the show. If you have, you know, if you start sprinkling in weeks where Punk has a week off, then maybe you have to announce ahead of time when he's on. But if he is on every week, regardless of if he's announced ahead of time, viewers are going to catch on to that and Punk fans are going to stick around. But you've got a lot of other things that feel somewhat exclusive to Collision at this point, not just FTR, but, you know, Miro and Scorpio Sky. There's things going on that are part of the Collision brand, and it does add some depth to what feels exclusive and gives you the main reason to watch Collision and not skip it like a lot of people skip Rampage. And then next week you got FTR against Adam Cole and MJF. And Adam Cole is, you know, a dynamite guy. MJF is a floating champion representing both shows. You know, he's on Dynamite every week and rarely on Collision, but it's not like a breaking of some sort of wall when he ventures over. And obviously with FTR being based on Collision and the tournament leading to MJF and Cole winning, then it just makes sense that the match would be on Collision. So that's going to be a boost in viewership. So I expect a little drop this week, and then they should, you know, certainly top 600 and maybe approach 650 next weekend. I think that's going to be kind of the range, 550 to 650. And then, you know, that number is important because that's your pool of potential pay-per-view purchasers and ticket holders. It's not only 18 to 49 year olds who buy tickets to live shows and go to pay-per-views. There's people younger and older. That big number matters, but the demo number also matters. And you know, frankly, right now NXT got a surge. Dominic Mysterio of all people led to the second highest viewership of NXT this year and one of the highest in the past couple years. And the demo rating easily beat Collision, as did the viewership this past Tuesday. Not that it's apples to apples to compare them. Saturday's a tough night, but NXT's the third show out of three in the WWE portfolio on live cable, and Collision is tied for number one, I think, in Tony Khan's eyes. So, you know, when Collision's below that, you can blame some of it on Saturday night, but part of it is, you know, AEW still has room to grow. CM Punk is a top-paid guy and a huge star, and, you know, a few years ago, if you said CM Punk would be the centerpiece of an AEW TV show, but he'd be losing to NXT, I mean, people would think that makes no sense, and that's happening. So, Mike, all that said, with what Hendrick brought up and what I just kind of laid out, how do you grade Punk's drawing power? And is, going back to Hendrick's concluding question, is Punk enough of a centerpiece to carry Collision with the supporting crew that he has? Or do they need to think about fortifying it with Jericho and Moxley and Kenny and the Bucks in a certain, you know, in Hangman in a more safe rotation?
Yeah, look, I think that would help, right? Because there is kind of a drop in terms of star power. You got Punk, who's very clearly at the top, and then that next level, that kind of tier 1A or tier 2, it's not as deep on Collision as it is on Dynamite. Like, you can look at the Elite in Kenny and then Mox and Danielson and Jericho, and then that next level of guys, I think, is the next level of guys on Dynamite is deeper and higher up from a positioning standpoint in the card than that second level of guy on Collision. That being said, it's also a much different type of show. Like, the booking is a little bit slower. Things are a little – or just paced differently. So I don't know that you need the depth on Collision the way you do on Dynamite, because there's less – it's 2 hours. Both shows are 2 hours, but the pacing of the booking is so different. You don't need to fill as much time, it seems like, on Collision, because things get to breathe a little bit more and the matches are a little bit longer sometimes. It doesn't seem like things are rushed from segment to segment to segment without a lot of time to breathe in between. And then also, like, it's a Saturday night, right? So I think if TNT continues to see the show get ranked inside the top 5 or 7 in the demo, regardless of overall viewership, they're probably going to be pretty happy with it. And in terms of overall numbers, it's almost hard to compare because it's Saturday is such a different type of night for television. Like, as long as they're continue to be in near the top of their demo and competitive with UFC Fight Night cards that are on the same night and other sports that are on the same night, I think they're fine. The big test to me is going to be what's going to happen 2 months from now when there's not just one college football game on Saturday nights, but there's dozens of college football games on Saturday nights, and usually a pretty big one on ABC. ABC, the network, usually has a pretty big one that I think is due with their partnership with ESPN. So that, to me, is the real test. What does this look like in September when they're up against a ton of football competition on Saturdays?
I know. I mean, this is absolutely part of the story. And do you want your top-paid wrestler in CM Punk, who you paid the type of money you did because you think he can help sell pay-per-views, seen by 30%, 40% fewer, 30-some percent fewer people than are watching Dynamite. And you're missing out on the chance to sell the larger Dynamite audience on buying tickets to see him on Wednesdays, but also they're not invested in whatever he's got going on pay-per-view, and that hurts. And he's your top-paid guy. I mean, last I heard, he was getting paid more than anybody, and that's part of, I think, probably, where some of the issues come up. Where he wants to, deliver every week and earn that paycheck, and there's some, resentment in the company. So, Hendrick, I guess to answer your question, as Mike said, the show's paced differently. The expectations are lower because it's Saturday night. There's always going to be an excuse for viewership going down where it doesn't fall on Punk because of college football. And I think Tony wants to keep Dynamite strong because he has to deliver better numbers on Wednesday than he does on Saturday. So I think it's sort of baked in. If Saturday's Punk show with FTR and a few others that, are a little bit of a drop-off from the top 4 or 5 people on Dynamite, arguably, disputably, then, especially with Bryan Danielson out, it's not as lopsided as it might have been. I think they're fine where they are, and I'm not against there being a little bit of breathing room for somebody to rise up and take advantage of a little bit of space where it's not so cluttered with, ex WWE main eventers or indie standouts or Japan stars. Maybe there's some breathing space for some people who, because that's been one of the issues, Mike, with AEW is why aren't they pushing that guy? He has momentum. And sometimes there's a politics or injury or side project reason, but sometimes it's Tony just can't justify not giving TV time to the people who are paid more. Collision is some breathing space for Tony as a booker to give an opportunity for someone else to rise up.
It is, yeah. And I'm interested, too, just in terms of the overall numbers, what does this week's show look like? Because this was the first time that I can remember in a very long time. I couldn't tell you the last time this happened, where they did the old WWE booking trick of we're going to announce the main event after the show starts. Like you said, they didn't advertise Punk ahead of time, which we'll see whether or not that has an effect overall. But the bigger thing, too, is they didn't really have an advertised main event until the show went on the air and in the first segment, which is not something that happens very often either. So there was a couple of things with this show in particular that feel different than what they've done in the past, which could have a positive or negative effect on the overall number as well, which will be interesting to see once we do get those.
Hendrick, back to you for any follow-up on that, or if you want to change topics, you certainly can.
I'd like to change topic. So Hendrick is a very Dutch name, and one of my Dutch brothers, which he has called me before, Malachi Black, he is kind of lost in the shuffle, and I don't really understand why he's been stuck for so long. I mean he would definitely be an amazing opponent to CM Punk. So why do you think there's been such a delay with Malachi Black?
Yeah, it's funny, when we talk about the stars of Collision and the ones who can potentially add depth, if Malachi Black became a singles centerpiece heel, you know, pretty much exclusive to Collision, that could be part of the identity of this show. And I think there are Malakai fans out there, and there's ones to be earned if he were to feature himself or be featured in that way with Brody Lee and Buddy Murphy being more a tag team. And he could be, you know, a compelling heel opponent for Punk. Some would argue it's not compelling because his promos are, you know, just sort of fly over your head and are a bunch of platitudes and stuff. But I think there's a lot there. And it does seem like he's sort of perpetually underperforming what people's gut tells them he should be, where he should be on the card. So, you know, from a babyface depth chart standpoint, you know, you look at, okay, Powerhouse Hobbs is, establishes himself as a babyface, and you've got CM Punk. You kind of run that down. You know, is he better off, Mike, adding depth to the heel single side as opposed to, you know, what often is a mistake in many wrestling companies, which is those six-man titles, which sound good when you have two three-man teams that fans really want to see go at it. But then you have to start pulling a bunch of people out of the tag and singles division in order to create feuds. And you end up with wrestlers, if the division means anything that fans care about, three wrestlers at a time or six at a time stuck in single matches fighting for titles that don't really have a lot of value in the eyes of the fans. And I think that's pulling Black down a little bit. So yeah, Hendrick brings up Malakai. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I do think he's kind of stuck there right now. And it's one of those things too, where when it comes to the six-man titles, I mean, there's only really truthfully two six-man groups in the entire company. And it's the two teams that were going after those titles tonight. Everybody else is either a group of singles or a tag team plus a single. You know, it's not really kind of a true group of three, whereas this, even though, you know, the Acclaimed have had their tag team run and then Billy Gunn kind of gets added to them, they've been a group of three for a while. Even when they were just going after tag team belts, Billy Gunn was still there with them. So it still felt like an actual group of three. But it does, it gets a guy like Malakai Black, I think, lost in the shuffle, because not only is he with two other guys on his own team, but every match he's in has six guys in it. It could be hard to stand out and to really kind of rise to the top when you're in there with five other guys. You know, it's not a one, he's very rarely in a one-on-one situation where a guy like him can look different and can shine. It's hard to stand out with six people in the ring. And for the most part, almost everything he's done recently has been with six people in the ring. And I think it makes it hard.
Do you like him in a pay-per-view main event feud with CM Punk? Or, you know, when I say main event, you know, top three, four matches. I mean, they're often ensemble shows.
Yeah, I think that can work, you know, for sure. I absolutely think that can work, especially because you need Punk going up against strong heels, like we said earlier in the show, and Malakai Black can be that. So, yeah, I think that could work. If positioned the right way and the story was right, I think that could work.
Hendrick, anything else you want to bring up?
No, that's it. Have a great night.
Appreciate your call. All right, we got a bunch of people who have called and they're on hold. No one else has pushed one on their phone. So if you want to join the conversation about anything we've talked about already or a subject we haven't, this is a good time to push one. If you're live streaming the show and you want to call in and join the conversation, you are absolutely invited to do that. And we have a taker. It is Mark from Long Island. So let's bring Mark onto the show. Mark, thanks for pushing one. What is on your mind tonight about Collision?
Hey, Wade, how are you?
Doing good.
Can you hear me?
Still feels weird to be doing live shows on Saturday nights, but I'm getting more used to it. It's fun, especially because Collision's been good.
Yeah, so I literally in the last, 20 minutes just forwarded through because, one, I had late dinner plans, but two, I feel like they're not really doing a great job at advertising what's going to be on Collision. So I went in, not looking forward to anything because I had no idea what was, going to be on or what to expect because I'm sure I may have forwarded through something on Dynamite where Excalibur ran through in 20 seconds what was going to happen, but I may have missed it, and they're not giving me anything to look forward to on Collision unless it's the Owen Hart thing last week where they hyped that real hard, but I just feel like they're not doing a very good job at advertising, so I understand why the ratings aren't really growing or like, so my first question, I guess, is just, like, do you think I'm the only one who is not really tuning in live just because they don't know what's going to happen or what to look forward to on Collision on Saturdays?
Mike, how important is that? I advocate for announcing matches ahead of time, not having Excalibur speed talk through them. And, you know, it's clear that I think it would at least been better to say Punk will be on the show in some form or fashion. How are they doing as far as that goes? Or do you think even Tony's experimenting, just seeing how big of a difference it makes to see how many people like Mark are out there and deciding, do I need to build my booking around making sure I have, you know, Punk's matches or, you know, more major matches announced, or will the viewership be steady even if I only announce, you know, a couple, you know, a trios match and one other match, but not really top shelf marquee, you know, big draws like we've seen the past couple of weeks?
I think he's experimenting. I do. I think he's 100% experimenting, because only because of the contrast in the last 2 weeks, or today and next week, right? Today, there was some stuff advertised. We knew about the six-man match. What else did we know? Was that the only thing that was really heavily advertised for this show? I think the Trios titles match was all that was really advertised that I can recall. Right?
Yeah, I'm jumping to PWTorch.com in our Collision preview because I want to see what refresh my memory. So they announced House of Black against the Acclaimed. And then as the week went on, they added Sky Blue and Ty Valkyrie and Bullet Club Gold against Action Andretti and Darius. So we knew that earlier today and maybe yesterday, but I don't think they announced anything but House of Black and Acclaimed on Wednesday. I'll go back and check out my report too on that. But yeah, I mean, even if all those were announced, it's hardly, you know, it's hardly a loaded marquee lineup.
Yeah, and then in contrast, look at what they did tonight. We almost know the whole card for next week's show. They announced the ladder match tonight. The ladder match we can talk about that later. The ladder match for a mask that the guy doesn't wear. But they announced the ladder match ahead of time tonight. The tag team match was announced, you know, on Dynamite on Wednesday when MJF and Adam Cole won. But there's a lot that's advertised for next week. There was not a lot advertised for tonight. So it does seem like this may be a bit of an experiment to see if it matters. See, because it seems like two very different approaches to the show on back-to-back weeks.
I looked up my Dynamite report, and Excalibur hyped Rampage in detail, and then only House of Black versus the Acclaimed and Gunn, and said, you know, more matches will be announced on Rampage. And I think it was on Rampage when they announced more matches. So, just one match announced, just kind of confirming that was the case. It was interesting. Like, it having Valkyrie challenge Britt Baker to a match, not for next week's Collision, but for Dynamite, felt a little weird on Collision, because I don't think we've seen a lot of matches being set up on Collision for Dynamite. There might have been an instance that I'm forgetting the specifics of, but generally they're trying to, you know, do angles on one show to promote that show the following week rather than one show to the next. We don't get that on SmackDown and Raw much at all either, where a match on Raw hype is built for SmackDown. So that's a little bit of a twist. I guess that indicates Britt's more of a hometown Dynamite and Valkyrie's more of a hometown Collision wrestler maybe, and she just wants to go to Britt's territory. I'm not sure. Again, it's the lines are still a little bit blurred in that regard. But Mark, I'm with you. I'd rather see the matches announced ahead of time. There are times when you see WWE announce SmackDown, for instance, and you're like, that's not going to fill 2 hours, and that doesn't involve any top stars. Well, you know the opening segment probably is going to have an angle that leads to the main event being set up. And that's what they did here. This was, you know, that formula. But that's where I go, you don't have to announce the match, but you can just say, you know, Punk will be in action also, just like they say Miro's in action. Mm-hmm. And people would assume, okay, well, at least I get to see him wrestle. And maybe this is one of those times it turns into something bigger than just a Miro squash match type situation. Mark, back to you.
Yeah, just, you know, Saturday's such a rough night as it is because, you know, people, like, do things on the weekends that, like, at least give you, like, a little bit of information, like, just information to, like, entice you to want to be excited to watch it. You know, I just think that would be, you know, something to work on. But that could just be me and you. But
I think you make a good point. It's especially important, Mark. Sorry, it's especially important for Saturday night. You know, you get invited out to dinner or go to a movie. You're like, oh, geez, Punk's going to be teaming with Darby against Starks and Christian. I got to see this. I want to be part of this. I want to listen to the Wade Keller Post Show afterwards live. I need to be – this is good. That's going to be my night. If you don't tell people that, then I can catch up on that Trios match later.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And like I said, I fast-forwarded through the show, but the one thing I did stop and watch, and I want to get you guys' opinion on it, is I watched – when Christian came out, I stopped and watched that just because – I think he's been so entertaining lately, and maybe just because I've been a fan of him since, you know, forever, that he is so – he's got this character so locked down, and he's doing it so well that's the one thing I stopped and watched. I watched him do the promo and, you know, saw the match get set up. So I just want to get your opinion on Christian and what he's doing right now.
Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm with you, Wade. Earlier you said, you know, he may be heel of the year. I mean, it's right up there. It really is right up there. I've been impressed with him, honestly. And I'm surprised to say it because, you know, and I felt bad. It really wasn't his fault. But when he was signed, it was such a dud. And it wasn't his fault. It's just that it was advertised as this big, huge surprise. And I think everybody built it up to be something bigger than it was. And then there was such disappointment. What it was just Christian, you know, and I feel bad even saying that. But you look now, it's been 2 years later, he's really developed into arguably the top heel on that show. Yeah, because it is somewhat distinctive rosters, and Christian hasn't done a lot of moving back and forth with Luchasaurus. So I think right now he's the top heel on the show. And if you told me 2 years ago when he signed that at some point he would have been – and granted, we didn't know there was going to be two shows yet at that point, but that he would be one of the top heels in the company, I would have said you were crazy. only because, I never would have thought he would have been put in a position to be elevated into that type of role. And I was, you know, I really, at that point in time, would have said there's no way people would ever buy him as the top heel in the company. It's ludicrous. But here we are. He's done exceptional work. I think he's the top heel in that brand, and that makes you one of the top heels in the company.
Mark, anything else you want to bring up? I'm with Mike.
No, that's...
on that.
No, I'll probably watch the whole show tomorrow when I have some time. But, next week I may end up going to the Hartford show. I'm actually not in Long Island. I'm in Westchester, so it's only like an hour and a half away. So, you know, depending how long a kid's birthday party goes, we may check it out. So if I decide to, I'll email you and I'll call in after.
I have updated your city, so now we know. But you're still an Islander fan.
Well, no, it's just that's like the easiest place to get to watch AEW. They come frequently enough that,
okay.
if I want to see them, I go to UBS. Yeah, no.
Really all right, cool.
Like I said, I'll keep you updated if I end up deciding to go, and hopefully I can call in next week.
Awesome. We'd love to hear from you, Mark. Thanks. Good to talk to you again.
All right. Have a good night.
Yep, you too. All right, our number if you want to join us is 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad, as area code 859 has done. 859, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Jeremy from Columbus, Ohio.
Hey, Jeremy, good to hear from you. What's on your mind tonight about Collision?
to be honest, the main reason I called in the show was to tell your co-host, Mike, person in person, how much I just enjoy the $5 challenge. I really love that part of his show. It's one of the highlights of my week, honestly. And Wade, it has a theme song that rivals that of Javier Machado. So, just want to throw that out there.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. I'll pass that along to Andrew.
give a little background on what that is for the people not listening to entice them to listen, because, you know, we don't want to be like AEW where we don't explain and we assume that everybody is going to know what we're talking about when cool things like this come up. Jeremy, why don't you do the honors?
So,
what do you like about
it's
it?
Just, the trivia, my favorite part is guessing along with the so, you know, he gets $5 or he gets five questions, wrestling trivia related, and there's always a theme to it, and the listeners of the show participate in it. It's really fun. They send in questions, and if he gets all five questions right, his co-host Andrew will give him $5. And you know, I can't state enough that the theme song is a banger.
The theme song was actually written by a listener too, and performed and recorded by a listener too. Jay in South Carolina, I think, was who did that. It showed up in the email. We were talking about it one week, Andrew and I, when we were answering questions, and we were like, "Oh, it'd be great if this segment had a theme song." And what do you know? Like 3 days later, boom, a theme song showed up in our inbox. It was great.
That's fantastic. Jeremy, anything else you want to add otherwise?
Yeah. So far, I've enjoyed Collision a lot more than I have. Dynamite. I guess I'm officially a collider. just like you said earlier, and the caller earlier, Christian was my favorite part of the show. My question is, though, I don't know, Wade, if you have a scoop on this about you know, where has Thunder Rosa been? I thought she originally was going to be part of the show, and you know,
yeah,
I was thinking. They could even, like, cut off some of that main event. It went kind of long. And, like, giving her just a squash match, but I don't know, maybe two squash matches on a night is too much. What do you guys think?
Yeah, and the only thing that I heard, and I believe she just said this in an interview in the media, that she's on her way to recovery, but she's not fully cleared yet. So that's what she's saying. I haven't heard anything to contradict that. And I think when she does return, because she was in the original PR, and I think she's still in the opening, isn't she, Mike, to Collision, or did she get replaced?
I believe so.
Yeah,
no, I think she is. I think she
yeah.
is.
So, yeah, I think it's just a matter of time. You know, when her back injury is cleared and she's pain-free and it's safe to start taking bumps again, then she'll be back. Yeah, and I mean, I think she'd be a valuable exclusive part of the roster. It might, you know, Mike, one of the things that has been weak so far, pointed out as a weak point of Collision so far, which I think has gotten largely good reviews. And there are absolutely people who are saying that they like Collision better than Dynamite. But one of the weaknesses is just an established kind of Collision women's roster that gets brought up in our PW Torch contributor articles on our website that are AEW themed. You know, where's that women's division? And, you know, maybe they're just kind of waiting until Thunder Rosa is cleared, and it's going to be kind of her division, because again, Collision is the landing place for people in certain instances who weren't getting along with people over on Dynamite. She was one of them. And you know, if Britt and her and Jamie Hayter are more Dynamite, it makes sense for the division to be built around the very talented Thunder Rosa. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, it seems like they're waiting for her. It really does. If she's still recovering, I mean, maybe it's not that far off, because it does feel like that division on the Collision side of things is in a little bit of a holding pattern. And my guess would be it's until she's ready to come back and be the centerpiece of it.
Yep. Yep. Jeremy, anything else you want to bring up?
No, that's all I got. Enjoy the show.
Great. Thanks. Yeah. Call again, please. Love to hear from you again. Mike, do you agree with Jeremy and others that Collision might, better is such a weird word, but that, that it makes sense that people would prefer Collision over Dynamite, even if they enjoy both, where you're not having to like say one is better because they're different and they're both have their own qualities and their own roster, but that Collision is different enough that you can imagine people who like AEW enjoying Collision more.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. I remember the night of the first episode, I think you and I talked about this, how this feels more like what I would call, for lack of a better term, a traditional wrestling show, where it's a little slower pace, and it's formulaic in a way, but that's kind of the beauty of it, where you've got the promo and then the match and then the video package and then the next, the segments are a little more well-defined, I think, where sometimes on Dynamite, yep, it feels like one thing bleeds into another, which bleeds into another, which bleeds into another, and it's kind of nonstop. And I've used the analogy before. It's just nonstop Excalibur screaming at me for 2 hours because, oh, my God, we have this. And, oh, my God, we have this. And it's a little jarring where this just seems a little more relaxed and a little more laid back and a little slower, but in a good way, like slower in a way that it allows you to chew on things a little bit more and digest it easier, I think, than on Dynamite, where you have a lot thrown at you in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, I would never call it boring. You know, Mark had mentioned maybe Jeremy had mentioned, I think, the main event was a little long, and maybe you could fit a, you know, Thunder Rosa match in there. I really enjoyed the main event. And, you know, I mentioned last week at pwtorch.com in a Keller's Take, discussing the differences between Collision and Dynamite. And I had, you know, talked to people over at Collision who were like, yeah, you know, we're taking pride as a locker room and in the leadership of among not just the wrestlers, but the people contributing to booking, and Tony Khan himself taking pride in Collision having its own identity. And you know, we got dives tonight, you know, with Darby jumping through the ropes and Christian a Punk and Starks and stuff. There were high flying moves. It's not like, you know, they're trying to, as Dan Keister and I said, drop the show into St. Louis, where there's not a move you wouldn't have seen in 1978 or 1984, you know, territory days. But it does have a sense of efficiency. Let's make everything we do count, and let's tell stories in the ring, and let's not act almost pathetically desperate to keep our fans, who we underestimate their attention span, tuned in. And there's times where Dynamite feels sort of desperate to keep you tuned in. The speed talking Excalibur, if he doesn't talk fast, people are going to be bored. You know, it comes from the YouTube generation of, well, you can't have, you know, you have to get right to it within 3 seconds, or the retention rate is really low. Like, there's this whole generation trained on that. You know, they're so in, you know, YouTube Shorts and TikTok and all that. It's like, you know, everything it's timed, and Dynamite feels like it's of that generation. And when I go to I don't go to movie theaters very often, but when I do, it's like I have committed. I've paid the ticket. I've settled down. And part of the appeal is I can't hit pause like I can at home. I got to just settle in, and this is where I'm going to be. And there's something that's sort of, you know, like an exhale and a relief. I'm going to be entertained, but I'm going to stick around for it. And Collision sort of has this confidence that we have the stars, and we're going to tell you stories, and we're going to give you a mix of things, but we're not just constantly scared you're going to tune out. And that was sort of the Crash TV era of Vince Russo. You know, that was a point of pride, trying to shake things up from a staid format with WWE and Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard and you know, the people sitting around, you know, Pat sitting around Vince's dining room table when booking meetings took place before the writing team happened in the 80s. Jared Jarrett was part of that at times, and I interviewed him about that. You know, the idea was, no, this is stodgy and stale, and we need to pick up the pace. It was overdone. And this does feel like we're getting back to something that's sort of timeless and again, not boring and not plotting, but not desperate and playing to the lowest attention spans. And I think it's working. You know, and again, it's so hard with ratings because, you know, how would this show work if you dropped it on Thursday nights instead? Sorry, Impact. And it had, you know, didn't have the disadvantage of Saturday. We'd have a little bit more of an apples-to-apples comparison with, say, NXT or Raw that we don't get when it's on a tougher night like Saturday. Mike, your additional thoughts on that if you want.
Yeah, it is hard to figure out, I think, where they're doing well compared to other shows, because it is such an apples to oranges comparison with the different night. It's not even like a different week. Anything during the week, I think you can safely kind of compare, and most week nights are the same. I think you can make the argument that maybe more people are busier on Thursdays than, let's say, on Mondays or Tuesdays. But for the most part, you can kind of – every weeknight is kind of the same with the exception of Friday. I think it's really hard with Saturdays to know what does 600,000 on Saturday – how does that translate to what it would be on a Wednesday or on a Tuesday or on a Thursday? It's really, really hard to figure that out because it's such a different night for TV, and it's – the numbers across the board are so much lower. It's really hard to kind of figure out how well are they doing. The only thing you really have to compare it to is – how are they doing against everything else on television?
Yep.
And how are they doing against themselves? Which there just isn't enough data yet. But, you know, things that you'll be able to look at, and I'm sure you will because you do it now with Dynamite, you know, what does the year-over-year ratings look like? What does the 10-week rolling average look like? I mean, there's going to be ways to kind of look and compare and draw conclusions on how well they're doing. It's just the show's, what, 5 weeks old? So there's really not a ton of data points yet to be able to have comparisons to.
Yeah, precisely, precisely. And, yeah, I think if they stick with this, in the locker room wants to, you know, I mean, they had a locker room meeting and talked about, you know, this is what we're trying to do. And they want everyone on the show to be on board with it. They don't want it to be herky jerky. And, you know, it seems paced one way and then it's another. There is a vision, and Tony Khan, as I've reported, has a different inner circle working with him on booking this show than he does for Dynamite. And the different viewpoints are being respected and ideas are being executed. And it is, I think it makes it more interesting for Tony to not just book basically two Dynamites with different names every week, but, you know, have something that's different. And I think it's better for fans, so it doesn't feel like too much of the same thing. It, in a way, not that SmackDown is like this unique format that's never been done before and blew things up, but Collision sort of feels like a show that's formatted off of someone who thinks SmackDown's format is if it, whether they like it or not, they know it's successful. You know, they know that SmackDown's doing well. Let's take a Saturday night show and let's pace it like Friday night SmackDown and see how we do. And again, like you said, you know, you don't need as big of a roster if you kind of pace yourself, take your time and that kind of thing. So, yeah, so far, you know, so good. The reviews are good. And, you know, one of these days I'll run a poll, you know, saying, are you, you know, Team Collision, Team Dynamite, or whatever the nickname is for fans of each show, or are you pretty equal? All right, let's go to area code 952 next. 952, thanks for calling. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, I'm David from Eagan, Minnesota.
David, I can hear you with my headphones off. How you doing?
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm like,
should I speak quieter?
No, I'm
oh, yeah.
Thank
you. Yeah, oh, yeah.
I'm right. I'm like a couple blocks away from you probably.
Yes, I understand that. Yes, I'll wave to you and you can say hi.
Don't feel bad for not getting that. It was a little clunky, but I can hear you with my headphones off. That was not meant to be too loud at all. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Hi. So, first of all, I enjoyed the show, and I'm loving the pace of Collision, and I never thought I'd be thankful for video packages, but here I am, being thankful for them. No one has surprised me more with where they started in AEW to where they are more than Darby Allin. And it's not that I didn't like him before, but I originally thought he had a ceiling, and now I'm not so sure. Mainly that's because his mic work has improved so much. He also has very good matches, yeah. And I think he has a great connection with the crowd. So his only drawback is his size, but I'm not sure that can't be overcome in AEW. And with the MJF Cole program not really exciting me and not getting me pumped for Cole winning the title belt, I'm really, if I'm Tony Khan, I'd actually seriously be thinking about having Darby be the one to dethrone MJF. Am I too high on Darby, or is that not crazy?
I agree with your specifics about Darby surprising being in a surprising position, including especially on the microphone. I think he's growing up in a way before our very eyes as, a reclusive loner skateboard kid. And by the way, that's kind of how he was behind the scenes. He had his own locker room. He just kind of wanted to be left alone. He didn't mingle a lot like that. And I think he's growing up the last few years into something other than that, and it's now reflective in his confidence on the microphone. Taz once didn't want to talk on the microphone, and then he turned into one of the great promos of the original ECW era, and now he's a color commentator. And early in his career, he didn't talk. I mean, you know, and there's other examples of that, Mike, of wrestlers where, like, oh, no, we can't let them talk. And, you know, even, like, Edge and Christian didn't talk much, and now, you know, Edge and Christian are doing great work on the mic. Christian is a guy I look forward to talking. On and on. You know, Jeff Hardy never quite got there. But, you know, sometimes people who are quiet don't develop into good talkers. But Darby, yes. I mean, he walked out there and was, I think, instrumental in turning a good portion of that crowd into at least not booing Punk and maybe cheering him. His size does still concern me, you know, from a just credibility standpoint. This is a physical sport, and there is a bit of a novelty aspect to him that in doses works. You know, Big Show fought Rey Mysterio and WWE, and I think they had a credible match because Rey was just a whirlwind of moves out, you know, just leaving Big Show dizzy and out of sorts because it was so different than what he was used to, and got in enough moves, and that felt like, okay, because of his speed and the angle he's coming at him, it makes sense. And Darby does that. You know, I mean, they're you know, obviously very different personality than Rey, but it works. But I think it works in doses as a main eventer who once in a while gives you hope he can win the title. I'm not saying he should never have a run with the world title, but I'm not sure I'd build an 18-month reign around him. But I'm, you know, my tone suggests I'm not as convinced as I once was that you couldn't. But my leaning is still no, and I hate that it's just a size issue. Unfortunately, AEW is full of wrestlers who are not so big that that's the only people he could wrestle. So, I mean, I think you could conjure up a scenario where it's not like it would put you out of business, but I just don't know if I would still decide to do that. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the Mysterio comparison is a good one. You know, where he's the top guy, he can be at the top of your card. I don't know that he's ever going to have a real long title reign in him. I think even though AEW is a smaller company, I do think, though, that there is still this idea amongst probably members of the locker room that you need to look a certain way if you're going to be the world champion. Look at him. I mean, a perfect example is MJF. Like, MJF 3 years ago does not look like the MJF that look the way he looks today. I mean, he's added significant muscle. He's gotten a lot bigger. And I think, you know, my guess is that he looked at it and go, look, if I'm going to be a world champion, I have to look a certain way. And Darby is never going to have that size. Like,
nor should he, but it would be such a stretch.
Exactly. And you can't, you know, he can't grow. He's not in control of how tall he is. You know, it's just it is what it is. But I do think you can have that type of guy flirt with the top of your card. You can have him flirt with a title picture the same way that WWE did with Mysterio and has done with other guys as well. I don't think that he's ever going to be the guy that Tony can look at and go, okay, well, we're going to put the title on Darby and he's going to have like a 1 year run with this thing. No, I don't think that that's ever going to be the role that he finds himself in. Will he find the title? Will he end up with the world title at some point, even if it's just as a transitionary champion? I think that could certainly be a possibility.
Yeah, Dave, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, basically, I would think it'd be more of a shorter range reign, and then maybe, Jay White or maybe CM Punk or somebody takes it from him pretty quickly, more of a transitional. But the only other thing I had was that Ricky Starks, I enjoyed him today. He is really reminding me of, like, early heel Rock. And at first I thought it might be too derivative, but then I realized I'm old, and that was actually, like, 20 years ago. So maybe it's not that bad borrowing from that gimmick.
Yeah, I mean, Kevin Nash was critical of LA Knight and took some heat for it. You know, saying, oh, he's a knockoff of Rock, and I think he's as much Austin as Rock. I think he's a blend of them, and then, you know, just some genuine Eli Drake and a little bit of Miz and a little bit of that, this and that too. I mean, you know, Ric Flair was patterned after another Nature Boy, and I mean, there's been all kinds of wrestlers who have been inspired by somebody of who's maybe 15, 20 years younger than them. I don't think there's any shame in that, as long as, you know, you kind of make it your own. And Ricky is self-aware of that. He said in the promo tonight, people try to compare me to people, and I am my own self. I'm absolute Ricky Starks. Part of those not just being words is making sure you do carve out your own identity. But yeah, I mean, there's a reason I think I compared Ricky Starks to LA Knight, you know, earlier. I think they both are subject of criticism, or at least being observed as copycats or derivatives or inspired bys or the next generation, next version of, Rock to a degree, and in LA Knight's case, more so Austin too. Mike, is that a problem for Ricky? Is it something that he should steer away from, or should he just go ahead and lean in on it? Or do you think it's overblown because he is kind of his own person? I mean, we can pull other people out of wrestling history who Ricky Starks may or may not be pulling from. There might be a little Eddie Gilbert, a little gorgeous Gino Hernandez. I'm trying to think of good examples on the spot here. Maybe someone will come to me while I throw to you. But you know, I don't think he's just clearly. I always use the Sonny Siaki comparison because when Rock was around, Sonny Siaki in TNA was like the poor man's Rock, and it was just so clear what he was going for, and it was kind of like, come on. I don't think Ricky's that. Mike, your thoughts?
I don't think so either. Yeah, no, I think he can lean into it honestly because like he does have he does have some of those personality traits of some of those other guys that you mentioned, but he does feel like enough of his own guy that it's not something that I think he has to worry about. Like it doesn't feel to me like he's trying to rip off something that somebody did, even if it was 20 years ago. I mean, I'm sure he's borrowed elements from those guys because he was probably fans of them growing up. But I don't think he's, you know, necessarily trying to be a 2.0 of any character that I've seen. Everyone is a derivative of something. but, you know, it seems like I definitely get the feeling that he's enough of his own guy.
Yeah. David, back to you. Any follow-up on that or anything else?
Nope, I just agree. Yeah, I think he can be his own person, and he can borrow in the least little, give nods to it. But that's all for me.
Do you think he should be a heel or a face? Is it a mistake to try to get fans?
I was going to mention. I don't know how this heel run's going when everyone chants for you. I think what I would do is probably just keep going with him the way you're going, and then just see if the crowd keeps cheering him. Then just go with having that same personality, maybe stop with the grabbing of the ring ropes, but then just have them be kind of arrogant and flashy. But if that's what the people are into, you go with it and just have them be a face. And if people start turning on them, have them be a heel. Just let the crowd decide for you.
See what happens. Are you a first-time caller?
Yes, I am.
David? Yeah, and how long have you been listening?
Oh, many years. Many years,
oh, cool.
Actually.
Cool.
I just usually listen. I watch and listen on delay normally. That way. I'm usually busy during the actual times that the shows are on.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious if we get some, you know, as Collision proves to be relevant and good, if it just works out for people who listen a lot,
mm-hmm.
to some of them who are more wallflowers are listening on delay the next morning because of work, end up calling in. So it's kind of, when we do get a first-time caller, I'm kind of interested to see what the context is, if it is a Saturday night situation, mm-hmm. in particular that it's doing, or just that someone discovering us who's new.
Yep.
All right, great, just David. I'll
nothing going on
I'll
on Saturday night.
Stand a line behind you at Cub Foods or something one of these days.
Yeah, exactly. I'll say hi.
All right, cool. Take care.
Yep, thanks.
And call again when it works out. I'm Mike. First, if you want to get on the phone, like we have cleared the phone numbers. We had somebody else calling up who left us here. So you're welcome to call. Our number is 347-215-8558. When you call push 1, it's we're getting near the now or never range. I do want to go to an email from Azan, who covers some things we haven't talked about much yet. And one of them out of three is, why do you think Darius Martin isn't getting the same focus and push as Dante Martin got when Darius was out with an injury? I think, and plug yours, Darius, that Dante has more natural charisma, and Darius and is a little flashier in the ring. And I think he jumps out as somebody. You know, when you're deciding who do you push and who don't you on a roster with a lot of talent, Darius seems like a tag team wrestler, and Dante seems like someone who could break out and be, you know, a up and coming young, you know, single starter route for. It's not to bury Darius. I think that might be the difference, you know, and there's no shame in that. But that's my take. I'm not looking at this going, why aren't they pushing Darius the way they did Dante? Not every brother act is the same. What do you think, Mike? Do you think that, or do you think different?
No, I think that's pretty fair. Two different people. I know they're brothers. I know they're in a team. I know there's a lot of similarities there, but there's reasons why members of tag teams, when they break up, one gets pushed more than the other. I mean, this is really no different other than the fact that they're related. So, I think it's almost comparable to the Usos. Like, why is Jay getting the push that Jimmy is? Like, because there's different traits that he has, there's different things he's doing that's connecting with the people. I mean, they are different people. So I think it's just a matter of circumstance and who's connecting better with the crowd in Tony's opinion.
Yeah, I mean, Kerry Von Erich was more marketable than Kevin Von Erich. You know, I mean, and Kevin had some singles runs and did, you know, wrestle for world titles. But Kerry was, you know, the bigger star and the more coveted one and had more charisma. And, you know, we can go over – bunch of brother teams over the years where, you know, there, sometimes there is just a different enough of a difference where one is clearly the favorite person to be pushed as a get a bigger push as a singles wrestler. Number two from Mazan. After watching tonight's match with Sky and Taya Valkyrie, Friday's two women's championship matches, makes me think Tony Khan and AEW Brass are making it obvious that Britt Baker's getting easy treatment, getting her easy wins, and always getting her name mentioned on TV every week, while other women have to work harder than her. What's your take? Well, this comes down to, one, do you agree with the premise, Mike? And two, does Britt deserve getting put on that pedestal? Or are we a couple years past the novelty of everything that went on with her and Shivani, and the roster is deeper and better, and she's not the clear-cut number one in-ring wrestler or promo at this point, and she should be in maybe a different spot, and the focus should shift to other women. It sounds like a loaded question, but I'm generally just trying to present another side to it.
Yeah, and that's kind of the side that I fall on. I think that she's fallen victim to what others on the roster have fallen victim to, and that's what they were there when it started, and it was a little bit smaller. And when you're in the small pond, and you're a moderately sized fish, even in a small pond, you feel a heck of a lot bigger. When you're in a much bigger pond and there's bigger fish around, you know, it, not so much. So I think she's not the only person that's fallen victim to that. There's others that have as well. She's still a very big act. Like, don't get me wrong. I just think you look back. You know, during the pandemic, when they were doing the pandemic shows, for instance, and even before that, when they were first launching the company, there was no question she was the number one women's star in the company, period. That she was the one that they were pushing. She was the one they were building around. She was also the new name. But, I mean, it was clearly that she – clear, very, very clear that she was the focus. And now it's just not the case anymore because they've signed Ruby Soho, and you have Toni Storm, and you have Taya Valkyrie, and you have Thunder Rosa when she gets healthy again. Like, there's so that division is so much deeper. I still don't know that it's deep enough that you need two titles, but it's, it's way deeper than it was 3 years ago.
And number three, he says, it's funny how more people care about Billy Gunn now compared to 1999 when he was feuding with The Rock. Why do you think Billy has connected with people as an act? And we've gotten this deep into the show, and we haven't talked about Billy Gunn unlacing his boots and presumably announcing his retirement through that ceremony, that gesture. It would seem to kind of cheapen that tradition to do it as part of an angle, but I wouldn't put that past anyone in pro wrestling to try to take advantage of that. But that seemed like genuine emotion on his part. It kind of came out of nowhere, so it makes me wonder if, you know, he's got some surgery he needs, and he's like, I don't want to have to, you know, come back and be at risk of something. And because he didn't do a lot in the tag match tonight. He took a nice bump at the end and all that. So I don't know what's going on. I haven't seen any reporting on it. I texted a couple wrestlers who know him, and they hadn't heard any. They didn't get a heads up. So I just don't know yet. And I'll, you know, I'm sure news, if it's not already out as we've been recording this show, you know, within a couple of days, we'll probably hear more. So, Mike, your thoughts on what happened to lead to Billy Gunn? Do you agree with the premise that he's more fans care more about him now than 24 years ago, and do you buy the retirement, or do you have any idea what's going on with that?
It struck me as an angle. I forget the exact line, but Ian Riccaboni said something on commentary over the course of the match, something about Billy Gunn wanting redemption for something, or he didn't want to be the one that got pinned again, or something like that, or he blamed himself for them not having this shot sooner. There was something that he said on commentary in the early part of the match. I don't recall exactly what it was. And then the way the match ended with him getting pinned, it struck me as an angle. Like, okay, he's blaming himself for the loss, therefore he's laid his boots down and he's going to retire. And now the story is going to be that Max Caster and Anthony Bowens try to bring him back and get him back for one more match. And maybe they win the Trios titles at that point or whatever. But it did feel... It felt like an angle to me. You know, he blew right past them, too. I think it was Bowens that tried to stop him as he was coming out of the ring, going up the aisle, and he kind of shrugged him off and pushed him off to the side and walked up the ramp. Other little things that struck me to make me believe it's an angle, I think the cameraman was right there and followed him up the ramp, so there wasn't like this surprise where he's running from behind him to try to catch him because, like, oh, he's not supposed to leave yet or whatever. Like, it felt like it was part of an angle to me, and my guess is the story is going to be he blames himself for the loss because he's the one that got pinned again, and now the Acclaimed are going to try to bring him back. That's my guess.
But yeah, we'll and see. I think that's a good guess. And if not most likely, as likely as it being a real retirement because it came so out of nowhere. I'm not ruling out, you know, that there isn't just something that came up where he's just like, this is it. You know, I've got something I got taken care of, a knee scoped, or, you know, I'm in pain or my back's hurting, and I've got this one last tag match in me. But yeah, everything you said is consistent. Everything that happened is consistent with how you're reading the situation of a storyline where the claim try to get him back. I hope it's not, you know, some angle where then he turns heel and joins the Guns or something, because it just wouldn't fit. And I think that, you know, Austin and Colton have new looks, and I think being with Jay and Juice is intriguing to me. And I think it's going to, you know, behoove them to shift their characters from being kind of goofy comedy punchlines and be more serious. And, you know, Colton got a late start, but Colton is really good. And I think he's improved his look. And I just think he's someone to keep an eye on. I mean, I think Austin is talented too. I've been a fan of the Guns going back to their days on Dark, and I was touting them when it was not at all popular to say. I mean, I've been touting Michael Cole's commentary, and people still give me weird looks. But people are starting to like Cole. Our outside correspondent last night actually said, oh, yeah, fans cheered for him, and in the past they booed him. Cole's gotten really good. He's really good at what he does. And people whose opinions I really respect, you know, agree with me when I ask, am I weird and thinking Cole's, like, really good right now? That's kind of how I felt about the Guns, you know, and when they were just jokes and people assumed that it was just a total they only got their push because of their dad. And they're coming along well, too. So, I think some storyline with Billy is going to take away what the Guns, I think, have accomplished, the Gun Boys, in maybe the journey that they're on, which is to separate from being the sons of Billy Gunn and being their own act. And that doesn't mean that that has to go that direction, even if it is an angle. But I'm saying if that is part of what's going to happen, I hope not, because I don't see a reason for Billy to go heel before at this stage of his career. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, Colton and Austin as a team, and maybe Colton as a singles wrestler, he's just so good at bumping, and he's improved his look, and I think he's just coming along so fast, you know, improving a lot. You know, there's something there that you don't want to ruin just by going regressing. So any thoughts on any of that, Mike?
Yeah, no, I agree with you, by the way. I think the Gun Club is very good and yeah, underrated, and it's good to see them start. They've branched out on their own now, and they're starting to gain some of their own momentum. The only thing, too, about the way that whole thing played out, and again, it made me feel as if it were an angle leading to somewhere. Maybe it's not leading to anything with the Gun Boys at all, and it's an angle just with the Acclaim, but right at the end of the match, the pin happens, and then Malakai Black did grab Billy and say something to him, and they played it up on commentary briefly. Again, I think Ian Riccoboni was like, we don't know, what was that? Was that a sign of respect? Was he showing a sign of respect to Billy Gunn, or was he saying something else there? And that whatever that slight conversation was seemed to be what prompted him to take the boots off. So it feels like it's a story being told. But at the same time, I could totally see that being a situation where the six guys in the ring knew it was his last match. And is that Malakai? I mean, on the flip side of that, was that Malakai Black, you know, getting into his ear as soon as the pinfall, saying, hey, thank you for allowing me to be the one to do it, or for putting me over as, you know, as the last thing you're going to do? Like, was that some sort of thank you, or was it some sort of angle? We just don't know.
Yeah. Yep. So I will keep asking around, and if we, you know, we hear anything definitive, we'll certainly report it over at pwtorch.com. All right, so I gave a last call for people to call up, and we actually had two people take us up on it. So let's go first to area code 917. 917, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is John from Brooklyn.
Hey, John, good to hear from you. What's on your mind about Doc Collision tonight? Good, good.
You kind of just answered my question. I was actually at the Prudential Center. I'm on my way home now, so sorry if it's a little noisy.
Oh, cool.
I was wondering what you thought about the Acclaimed and Billy Gunn and where you see them going next, and also if you think they'll ever be as over as they were when they won the championship a while back, because it seems like they've kind of died down a bit.
Regarding the Acclaim, you're saying they've lost some of the speed?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with that, John. I think Mike with the Acclaimed, you know, they got really hot. They got a big push. Max Caster's raps became kind of a signature moment on Dynamite for a while. And then they got, you know, real big into the scissors thing, and that got heavily marketed, and they had merch and leaned heavily into it. And I'm not quite sure where they are right now. I don't feel like they've fallen. Like, you can't have a peak that's good if you aren't willing to accept that there's going to be a new normal. There's going to be a normal that's a little lower than that. You can't just stay at peak level all the time. So I'm not worried any time an act isn't at their peak. There's going to be an ebb and flow, unless you're, you know, well, even Roman Reigns or something. I mean, there's going to be an ebb and flow even to that, the Bloodline. And we had a little bit of kind of that after WrestleMania where it's like, is this losing steam? And then, boom, I think it's picked up again. So I'm not, like, worried that they're not going to get back to a high level, but it does seem like a little bit of the shine is off them, and I don't know if they leaned into the scissors thing too much or if the Billy Gunn thing just sort of, as much as people were into it, maybe it played itself out, or the opponents that they've been feuding with got, I don't know, it felt like it wasn't top tier. So, yeah, where are you on the Acclaimed? What do you think of just what John brought up in terms of the framing of it, and then where if you think that they have cooled off but they will heat up again?
I think they've cooled off but they'll heat up again, and I think that's just kind of the ebb and flow of wrestling. Like you said, nobody stays on top all the time unless you're John Cena or Steve Austin or Hulk Hogan, you know, going back over the last 30 or 40 years. Everyone has kind of had an ebb and flow to their career in terms of how they're featured. There's always peaks. There's always valleys. And it feels like right now the Acclaimed, they were cooled off a little bit so that some other teams, mainly this blind eliminator tournament, could happen. And you could tell the story with MJF and Adam Cole. But, I mean, they're still clearly over. I mean, you listen to the reaction that they got tonight. I was in the building and heard the reaction they got on Wednesday. They're still very over with the live crowd, which means they're going to end up getting elevated back into that position at some point.
Yeah. Yep. John, I'll go back to you. If you have any follow-up on that, that's fine. If not, I wouldn't mind hearing a little bit about your experience in the arena.
Yeah, absolutely. I was there when they won the titles as well. I saw them at Arthur Ashe and also at Full Gear at the Prudential Center. And I could say, even though the crowd, you know, is really into them tonight, the response they got those other few times that I saw them was, I would say, exponentially louder and bigger. So I'm just hoping, because I'm a big fan of them, that they do end up moving back up into the title picture or something. I'm just wondering if there's a way they can reinvent themselves or maybe become a little more serious, especially with the landscape of the competition on Collision. It seems like a little bit of a mismatch, considering the promo that FDR cut tonight and how seriously they take and seem to want to present tag team wrestling. And then my other question was just around how the CM Punk match came over. Because in the building, I mean, people hate CM Punk, it seems like, in the New York, New Jersey area. So I'm wondering what it sounds like, it felt like on TV.
Yeah, so on TV it sounded like mostly boos for Punk when he first came out. And then there were some CM Punk chants when the match began. I felt the tide turned, actually, going back to the promo, when Darby said, "I'm with Punk, he's my friend." And it seemed like it took some of the steam out of the Punk haters, because everybody who doesn't like Punk, I think for the most part, like Darby. And I thought that changed things. And then we just had dueling chants, you know, "Let's go Ricky, CM Punk," during the match. So I want to throw to you, because, well, Mike, first, how you characterize Punk briefly. We talked about it earlier, and then we'll throw back to John to get, you know, a little more have him elaborate a little bit more on if there was any change in tone as the show progressed.
Yeah, no, I think that they are trying to lean into him as a heel, and I think that's what he's trying to do as well. But, you know, it felt like with the kind of the goofing around with the Chicago Blackhawks, New Jersey Devils thing, it almost like he was trying to give the people an opportunity to boo him at the beginning, if that's what they wanted to do. And then I think the Darby, you know, Darby coming out and giving him the endorsement of, "Hey, this guy's my friend," what was them trying to make sure people knew, hey, that little interplay aside, Punk's supposed to be the babyface here.
Yeah, so, John, fill us in a little bit. Did my characterization of how it came across on TV match what you experienced in the arena, or can you add to that or change or disagree with some of that framing?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. It didn't feel like they were presenting him as either a, you know, face or heel. It just seemed like he's his own thing. And it did seem like they were trying to get the crowd more behind him by putting him with Darby and, you know, having him refer to him as his friend. After the match, there was a promo that Punk cut. Just thanking people, talking about his love-hate relationship with New Jersey, making a few jokes about the Devils. I don't know if that was on TV, but it does seem like they're going more in the direction of, you know, trying to get the crowd back behind him. But based on where the shows have been taking place, it doesn't seem like that's happening. It feels a little bit like people are a little bit sick of him or a little over him. After all the shenanigans and, you know, acting like a child when he's a, you know, middle-aged man.
Yeah, yeah. And so when there were chants pro-Punk, we heard boos come out.
Yeah.
Can you, yeah, like, so it, was there a majority, clearly, who just weren't going to put up with a minority cheering for Punk? Or did it seem like Darby's endorsement and Punk being sort of cool about the booze and not, like, you know, throwing fits and feeding into it. It sort of it didn't mean he won people over, but it sort of quelled it, softened the pushback against him. Like, is there a way, if the goal is for Punk to be a babyface, if that's their goal, and I think that's their goal, do you think they're playing it right in a New York kind of market crowd like this?
I do think that they're, you know, taking it slow and they are playing it right to get people a little bit more behind him. I just don't think that it's going to happen in these markets. I can tell you, having seen him at UBS when he was feuding with MJF, that's a special place because they really hated Punk and loved MJF. It didn't feel as lopsided tonight, but there was definitely a lot of CM Punk hate in the crowd. There was also a lot of distracting chants during their match. Before the match started, during commercial break, Dasha was out and she was calling out the different sections. And then the entire match, there was a back and forth between Section 5 and the rest of the Prudential Center telling them to shut the F up. So that was. It seemed almost like the crowd was more focused on that during the bulk of the match than they were even on what CM Punk was doing. There were exciting parts. I think people really got into it with when Ricky Starks was in the ring, and it seems like people are very, very behind him. I wonder if they're going to pivot and move more towards pushing him, especially with the reactions he's getting.
Yeah, did Ricky talk about whether it was 50-50, 70-30? What was the percentage of people cheering versus booing Ricky, and did it change at all based on anything that he did? Or because obviously if you're interacting with Christian and you're not on the same page as him, it's going to kind of sway people to cheer you. But he was on the heel side, clearly playing a heel. So just describe the ebb and flow of the crowd reaction to him in the promo and in the match.
I think throughout the match, people were into Ricky Starks, regardless of whether he was playing the heel or not. And I think a majority of the crowd was very anti-Punk. I do think people think it's fun to boo Christian and really appreciate the way he presents himself as a heel. I mean, the turtleneck without the sleeves was over. Everyone was chanting turtleneck at a certain point in the match. And there are those little things that he does, you know, with his experience that really make it hard for you to, you know, cheer him. And I think that did help kind of sway the audience in the direction that they were aiming. But I do still think that most of the audience was really, really anti-CM Punk, no matter what, like regardless of what they did in the ring.
Do you think, based on the reaction to Starks, he should be a babyface and they're fighting too big of a headwind for him to be a heel?
Yeah, I think he's an excellent heel. I think people will get behind him, though, as a heel if that's the way they present him, because they do really appreciate him and respect him, and it seems like that kind of crowd tonight at Collision and at the other AEW shows that I've been to, where the audience seems to really want to go with the way the wrestlers are being presented. So if they're presenting him as a heel, they will kind of eventually come around. But I think it's going to be an uphill battle for Starks to be a heel.
Yeah. Mike, do you want to, if John's got time for us, do you want to ask him anything about his experience tonight?
Yeah, I'm curious what the reaction to Miro was. I mean, we've kind of seen him do very similar things since he came back. They did throw in the wrinkle of the pre-match attack tonight. Not that anybody thought that was going to still result in him losing. It did seem like that was a different wrinkle. It wasn't just him out there squashing guys. What was the reaction that he had?
Miro got a huge reaction. People jumped out of their seats when he came out. I think people were very, very excited to see him. I was happy to see him. And excited for his return. I think he can, continue rising if they play it right and bring him in slowly. But I do think he needs more substantial opponents. Tonight was Nick Camarado, who we haven't seen in months. So I think I'd like to see him, in a bigger feud to show, what their intentions are with him. But he got a great reaction, and the audience definitely likes Miro.
Did Tony Khan come out at all in front of the crowd?
Yeah. Every show I've been to, he's come out in between shows. So before Collision, they had a few hours of Ring of Honor tapings. And then as the show was ending, he came out between the Ring of Honor taping and Collision, and then he came out again when Collision ended, asking people to stick around because they were doing more Ring of Honor matches. And he just, went into how excited he was to be there in his awkward Tony Khan way. he seems as excited as the audience every time he's out there.
Yeah, for sure. Was there anything off-air of note that you want to share with us before the show, after the show, or even during commercials, or maybe something off-camera of note?
No, I mean, this show is pretty standard. I would say that Collision, compared to my experience at Dynamite, felt a little bit more like settle into your seat, slower paced, where the Dynamites that we've been to have been, a lot of fast-paced action, in your face, like jumping out of your seat kind of experiences. I don't, just based on the difference, I feel like Collision is more a show meant to be watched at home on TV with the commentary and, really building things, where I think Dynamite is a much more fun, interactive live experience. But there was nothing major in between or during commercial breaks that happened, nothing of note.
Anything? Did you stick around after Collision for anything that happened?
Yeah, there was a match. They changed over the rings, and then there was a match between what's the guy, Zach Clayton, from the Jersey Shore stuff, against Kevin Matthews. Yeah. But I didn't stay for the end of that.
Oh, you didn't stay. Gotcha. Yeah.
As that match was starting, about 70% of the potential center left. So
okay, all right.
That wasn't enticing people to say.
Cool, Mike. Anything else you want to throw John's way before we let him go?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, thanks for giving us a call. Yeah, it was great talking to you. Appreciate you taking time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks a lot. Have a great night, guys.
You bet. Yep, you too. All right, we'll sneak in at least one more call here. Bryant in Boston has called us up. Bryant, what's on your mind about Collision tonight?
Well, I thought the show was a welcome contrast to Dynamite. For one thing, the commentary team is much more tolerable, at least. And I really didn't have any complaints about this show except two, and I'll just knock those off real quick, and then I'll get to the stuff that I'd like for the most part. The one thing, I'm a massive New Jersey Devils fan, along with the Dallas Stars and Seattle Kraken. One of the benefits of rooting for three NHL teams is that if one sucks, you still get two more. So CM Punk in his promo was wrong about the Devils getting out of the first round. They did get out of the first round. They made it to the second round, so he made a mistake there. Took issue
more than my Minnesota Wild can brag about. He's thinking about the Minnesota Wild.
Well, at least the Wild did.
Yeah, please.
Yeah, at least.
That was just brutal to watch. And it's not like Brian. It's not like I want anyone, any sports fans in Boston, to get any more titles. But man, that team. Maybe in 3 years I won't remember it at all because it's not my team and all that. But like watching that fall apart the way it did from a distance, not having even been all that aware of how great the regular season was until I started paying attention to the playoffs, it just was stunning. So anyway, yeah. But Mike, just unplug yours. We can go back to wrestling.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not a Bruins fan, so it didn't really concern me that much. But at least Minnesota didn't collapse against Vegas like Dallas did. But anyway, the other somewhat bigger issue I had was the women's match was good. I like that Taya Valkyrie got a win because, you know, she hasn't been booked terribly well since losing to Jade Cargill. The promo that she had was interesting. I'm kind of glad she got some promo time. But, you know, the women's division is just plagued by the fact that Tony Khan doesn't do any long-term booking for it. I mean, this is just to set up a match with Britt Baker. And my question is it just going to be to set up that short-term match, or is there going to be something bigger that goes into this when that match takes place on Wednesday? Because I have to admit, the Wednesday show, other than Swerve and Darby Allin, looked like garbage to me, and I was seriously considering not watching it. But then when they made the Britt Baker Taya Valkyrie match, I'm like, okay, I'm more inclined to watch now. So I'm just wondering if you guys think that's going to, like, this matchup is going to lead to anything storyline-wise?
Yeah, so they, just for context, they plug Dynamite next week will feature Orange Cassidy against AR Fox for the international title, a favor. Yeah. Fox getting a title shot thanks to Darby going, do me a favor, which is a very weird way to get a title shot. Swerve Strickland against Darby Allin, which should be good. Britt Baker, Valkyrie, which is set up tonight. Pac versus Gravity, in what Ian, I think, framed as a dream match, which I think a lot of Dynamite viewers were like, what? And and John Moxley and Claudio against the Lucha Brothers against the Best Friends. From a match standpoint.
When was that match made? I haven't heard of that.
Yeah, they announced that. That was the last match they announced, right before they said there'll also be a promo with Cole and MJF. I kept typing and thinking it was the last match they'd plug, and then they kept adding more. So, so Moxley and Claudio against the Lucha Brothers and Best Friends is the featured match, but that's just going to be, you know, a chaotic ref not needed spot fest. Maybe with or without a purpose to it, you know, storyline wise, it might just be there from, we'll see. I mean, I don't know. But it seems like they're building it around. Yeah. You're going to hear from Cole and MJF. That's why you should tune in. Mike, the women's match, Valkyrie issuing the challenge. What do you think of Valkyrie's performance in the ring and especially on the mic and the way she kind of reacted to the crowd? I thought it was interesting, you know, her cadence. You know, she was confident on the mic and, you know, she's done a lot of mic work, but there was sort of a cadence to it, which is kind of like, it's just one, I'm going to catch my breath and I got something to say, but, you know, I'll do it at my own pace and I'm going to insult you at my own pace. There wasn't like this, like, desperation. I've got my words memorized and I'm going to spew them out. And there was something I kind of liked about it, but it was in sort of a different category.
Yeah. I like the way she did it, honestly, in terms of how she was kind of catching her breath. I mean, she just got done with the match. All that stuff makes sense. It reminded me a little bit of a Mean Gene interview without Mean Gene there. I thought the wording was a little clunky. Like the way she began it was a little clunky. I think she said something to the effect of, like, you know, things haven't been going my way recently, but
yeah,
I picked up a
won.
Win. And yeah, exactly. And then tried to say, you know, Britt, you have been winning, but you haven't been beating anybody. So that was a little weird. But overall, you know, I thought it was good. Look, I mean, she hasn't had a ton of mic time in AEW. It's good that on a show like Collision, someone in her position can get 1 to 2 minutes with the microphone in her hand to try to do something and build up a match on the following Wednesday. You know, I think that is the good thing about Collision, that slower pace sometimes allows you to do things like that. Whereas, you know, if this match, if Ty Valkyrie and Sky Blue, if that happened on Dynamite, I don't think there's the time to give her the 30 to 45 seconds to cut the promo. Like, there's just not enough time. So that's one of the beauties of Collision, is that slower pace gave them the opportunity and gave her the opportunity to be able to do that.
Yeah. So, Brian, yeah, back to you.
I just think Collision in general is a somewhat better, is a considerably better show than Dynamite, at least for this week, because, you know, the commentary isn't all frenetic and all over the place, and the commentary actually goes more slowly. They build stuff up, which isn't really the case on Dynamite. And, you know, things are just allowed to breathe more. And part of me wonders how much Tony Khan is actually writing the show on Collision, and how much CM Punk and Bryan Danielson and others are writing the show on Collision. Because I don't know if Khan, it seems to me like Collision is more delegating for Tony Khan. And I think if that sort of show translated to Dynamite, then Dynamite might do better in the ratings. I do wonder about that.
Well, I've had two good sources tell me that Tony Khan is the head booker of both shows. He's as involved in both. Is Dynamite more his vision and he's booking Collision, but he's being more placating, subservient, open-minded, pick your term. I think there's probably a fourth term that's a little bit better, of bending a little bit more to a different vision. And that different vision includes FTR and Punk and some other voices. That's possible, but it's not like Tony's being handed a script and he's just augmenting it slightly. Like he's writing the show, but he's writing the show with a different vision that those wrestlers and other voices are part of the construct of the show and the detail work in terms of finishes and pacing and match length and, you know, how to cut stuff so it doesn't seem too jammed and that kind of thing. The promos at the beginning of the show is, you know, a little bit of a differentiation. But it's a credit to Tony. One person I asked was frustrated that Tony's booking, and the other person was neutral on it. The other was like, yeah, it's still Tony, exasperated. Like, it would be nice to have a completely different vision. But in fairness, I mean, it really is a different vision, a different execution. I don't think there's a reason to be down on Tony if he's involved. I think there's a reason to give him credit for being willing to say, maybe the way we've been doing Dynamite isn't the objectively only best way. And maybe there's merit in another way that might be better or nearly equal or equal. But even if it's only close to equal in his eyes, but a little not quite as ideal, the fact that it's novel and different gives it bonus points to make it worth doing, even if he thinks it's not the best way to do it. And that might be what's going on in his head. There might be a little bit of, I'm hearing you, but I feel like we should be picking up the pace and not leaning on long matches and not doing this. But if you want to try this, you know what? At least it's different than Dynamite, even if I think Dynamite's the preferred format in this era. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think he, like you said, he's in charge of both shows, but I think the people around him on both those shows are different. So I think the people that have Tony's ear in each of those separate, because as much as the talent is different on each of those shows, I think there's a team that helps book each of those shows too, right? So I think what we're seeing in the difference in the booking is that the people that have Tony's ear, the 2, 3, 4 people on Dynamite that have his ear, have a different style than the 2, 3, or 4 people on Collision that have his ear.
Let's just put faces on it. Sonjay Dutt and QT Marshall compared to CM Punk and FTR. I mean, tell me you don't see it. I mean, the support crew is reflective of the product. I mean, it's not a big mystery. You know, Tony can sit there at the table with FTR and Punk, and you know he's going to churn out a different show because there's things that Sanjay and QT in particular would suggest that FTR and Punk are going to be like, no effing way. You know, Sanjay's like, you know, that's his personality. And QT like QTV, and we're going to be sleazy, sleazy reality TV and gossipy. And we're going to have a put a woman on TV because look at her. And that's not what FTR and Punk are all about. That's not their vision of wrestling. So, you know, they're going to play into different tendencies of Tony. And, you know, hey, we leave our house in our car to go out to eat. We don't know which of the two restaurants we're going to until we kind of have to turn left or right. And I think there, you know, you can like two things, and Tony might like two different things. He went with one for Dynamite, but now he gets the chance to turn right instead of left at the intersection and do a different style for Collision. And it doesn't mean it's not his vision. It just means, you know, it's a different part of what appeals to him as a fan or what he thinks will work as a businessman booker.
Yeah, I to which I would respond with, I agree with you completely, but, you know, I think you risk dividing your fan base by doing this, and I don't think that's a good thing. I think you need consistency, and I would suggest to Tony, far be it from me to be, you know, like the most knowledgeable on wrestling, but, you know, from having watched close to 20 years of wrestling myself and following it pretty closely, I think he should be listening to the people on Collision a lot more than he listens to the people on Dynamite, because I think if he did that, Dynamite would be a much better show. Because let's face it, Sanjay Dutt and QT Marshall, good wrestlers, lousy bookers. Marshall just keeps getting on TV, and I'm sure he's a nice guy and stuff at his PBA bowling rallies and everything, but Khan... Unfortunately, I think Khan has this strategy of trying to placate everyone instead of just, you know, as much as I hate to pump Vince McMahon a little bit, or, well, ignore Vince McMahon, let's say Triple H or something, he's got to be decisive and stop placating people and start, instead of, you know, you can be friends with people, but you also got to be their boss. And I think if you cut out the influence from most of the people that he hears from on Dynamite and listen to the people more on Collision, I think Dynamite would be a much better show.
Mike, what do you think about that?
I mean, well, I would tend to agree with him because I like, just as a viewer, I like Collision more than I like Dynamite, which is more appealing to me.
Same here.
So I would be in agreement. I'm sure there's other people that feel completely different, that feel the opposite, right? But my own personal taste, I do find myself enjoying Collision more than I enjoy Dynamite.
Brent, anything else for us?
Yeah, I'll leave off this last point because I know it's getting late, and I appreciate the time you guys are going to, especially on a Saturday night. I've mentioned this idea before, but I think you've got to, given that the women's division storylines have been lacking and the long-term booking has not been good, I think you've got to get rid of the TBS title, have one female champion that you can focus on, and I know a lot of people aren't going to like this because, you know, it's another title and things, but, you know, by getting rid of the TBS title, you got to add women's tag titles. Because you have a strong division now, and you've got to give them something to do. You know, you got to have more than one women's segment on Dynamite. And I think the benefits for introducing that outweigh the negatives. Is, you know, you give the women something to do, you'd have more storylines, and, you know, hopefully it would necessitate Khan, whatever he's doing booking the women's division, hopefully he would listen to people who are more knowledgeable. And I just think it would cause him to pay more attention to the women's division, perhaps leave it in hands of people who are better than who he's leaving in the hands of now. So I'll just hang up and take whatever your guys' analysis is on that. And thanks for taking my call, and have a good night.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate it. Mike, anything you want to add to what Brian just said there?
Yeah, I don't know what to do there, honestly. I mean, they definitely don't need two women's titles and two women's singles titles. At the same time, if you're going to go ahead with women's tag team titles, I'd be fine with it if you get rid of one of the singles titles, number one. Just as a general rule, I think if they add any more titles at all, regardless of what division it's in, it needs to replace something. Like, we can't – we're at the max number. Like, if you're going to introduce a new title, it needs to replace something else. That to me, is a hard and fast rule. But if you're going to go with women's tag team titles, I would prefer them wait until they established some women's tag teams and not just do women's tag titles in a tournament to crown the first champion, and here's a bunch of singles wrestlers that we're just pairing up. Kind of like the blind tag eliminator, in order to distribute those titles to someone. Like, they need some actual female tag teams before they can have women's tag titles.
Yeah. All right. So I want to bring up the FTR promo. It was one of the things advertised. It was at the top of the second hour, and it felt like, and I could have led with this. I know we're getting to it very late in the show. But I briefly mentioned earlier, I wanted to circle back. FTR is out there fighting the battle of a crowd chanting double clothesline and, you know, indicating they're enjoying the comedy skits. And you got FTR trying to establish what the personality of Collision is and what their identity is and what the Collision fan should be cheering for as a philosophy about what pro wrestling should be. And he's, you know, it's a difficult task. He's throwing Adam Cole a little under the bus, a fellow babyface. Saying he's part of these silly skits and dance-offs. And the crowd is not – they don't want to boo the dance-off. They don't want to – like, FTR could cut that promo about WWE. You know, we're not going to be, you know, walking around with mops and, you know, whatever WWE's doing that's upsetting people, you know, in recent months. Like, that was a promo you cut if you're trying to disparage the actual competition. But they went out there, and not only didn't they really have the crowd on their side, but they're tearing apart to a degree. Not like intentionally, but there was just no way to avoid it. Like, if you're trying to contrast who you are compared to them, you've kind of got to express you think it's unprofessional, silly nonsense what they're doing. And the crowd wasn't with him. And I think, you know, Dax handled it well. He was the one who got the brunt of it because Cash talked up front, and Dax was the one who was kind of reacting to the crowd. What did you think about that? And what does it say about just the general philosophy of sometimes a cute, fun angle can end up being difficult to navigate when it comes time to be their opponent? You know, I would say, like, oh, it does, you know, people go, oh, it doesn't matter. He's a tweener. She's a tweener. Let the fans choose. Well, right, but if it's someone who's a heel who's very popular, I don't want to be the baby face facing them because it's going to hurt my brand if I'm not cheered against someone who's presented as a heel, even if you're trying to frame it as, oh, it's just fine, people cheer them. So here we have FTR as a baby face tag team going out there trying to build up a match. No, they got one heel and one face. I like the part where they go, come on, you don't really trust MJF, right? But the fans don't care. They're just having, you know, the ones who like it, and it's about half the audience, are enjoying it. They don't want to hear FTR disparage it. So to me, it's like FTR is a bad matchup for that. It put them in a difficult position. What did you think watching that?
Yeah, I agree. And especially, too, after watching the reaction that MJF and Adam Cole in the whole dance-off thing, and even the video package, watching the reaction that all that stuff got in the building on Wednesday, I came away, I think I said this when I called in after the Dynamite on Wednesday night, I was not on board with this up until tonight. Like, just having seen witnessing the reaction it got in the building, I said to myself, you know what, they've got something here with these guys. I don't think it's long-term. I mean, they're not going to be a tag team forever. MJF is the world champion. But I think there's a ride that they can, a wave that they can ride here with Adam Cole and MJF as a team, because it seems to be working. And it's not unanimous, nothing ever is, but I agree. Unless you're trying to go heel with FTR, to have them come out and immediately rip down the stuff that at least half the audience is really enjoying about the chemistry that MJF and Adam Cole have together was a weird choice. And unless the idea is that they're going to come out of this match being heels moving forward.
I think they want Cole to be a babyface, MJF to be a heel, and FTR to be babyfaces coming out of this, and FTR to be aligned with Punk. And they have this just sort of awkward where the tag champs and they want to turn them into win the tag titles. And the turn has to happen with the stakes being high when MJF turns on Cole, or if it's a, you know, big swerve, they turn MJF babyface and Cole turns heel. And Or, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, there's more than those two options, and there's nuances of those two options. But, I circle back to it. It put them in a tough position, and I think Dax, his body language sort of showed that he's like, this is putting us in a tough position, because this isn't a long-term feud for them. It's not like our style versus their style. This is just, we're the tag champs, but we're sort of the Washington Generals for the Harlem Globetrotters story of Cole and MJF. It doesn't mean they're going to lose like the Generals always did, but we're not the reason people are showing up to see this match. And that's awkward for them. And then you have the idea that some fans are going to be cheering the stuff that they on principle stand against. So it was a good promo from FTR, but it was fraught with things that you want to avoid, I think, more off, you know, the vast majority of the time.
Yeah. And if the idea is that they're going to stay baby faces out of this, it almost doesn't work. I mean, I thought from a content standpoint, it made sense because the stuff that FTR was upset about, you could would be able to imagine FTR being upset about it, you know, because they are just, they carry themselves differently than the way MJF and Adam Cole carry themselves. So that part of it made sense. It's the idea that there is a pretty big segment of the audience right now that's very into what those guys are doing. And the comedy skits and everything else that FTR, you know, was so dead set against, that if you don't want to turn them heel, I think you run the risk of potentially having them elicit that type of reaction because of what they said.
Mike, is there anything else on tonight's show that we didn't cover that you made a mental note or an actual note to cover it all?
No, the only thing I found, again, I mentioned and joked about it a little bit earlier, but the fact that they're now the ladder match for next week just feels like an excuse to have a ladder match. And I'm sure it's going to be great. Buddy Matthews and Andrade are going to have a terrific ladder match, because I'm sure that they will. It just, I don't know why it's a ladder match. It seems like it was just, well, we want to have a ladder match. What? There's no titles here, so what could we put on the line in order to have a ladder match? Oh, let's put the mask on the line that he doesn't use in the ring, really, and doesn't really wear all that often, and didn't wear when he was on the show an hour before the match was announced, getting kicked out of the building. I just found that a little bit funny. It seemed like they were looking for a reason to have a ladder match with, hey, you know what? I'm sure when we're done watching it next week, I'm going to be saying, good, I'm glad they found an excuse to have a ladder match, because I'm sure it's going to be great, given the two guys that are having it. It's funny that they're kind of shoehorning it in there.
Yep. All right. I think we're good to wrap up here. I appreciate our callers, our on-site correspondent, our email, and everybody who's listening. Thank you. Keep spreading the word. Check out the PW Torch YouTube channel if you haven't yet. Of course, visit pwtorch.com. I have been posting editorials more often, sometimes with narrative-busting insider information baked into them. We've got some scoops on the LA Knight situation also up in the news section. And as always, our ratings reports and much more. So hope you're making a habit of listening to PW Torch or visiting pwtorch.com in addition to listening to these shows. Check out Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek on the PW Torch Daily Cast. Our latest show is available right now. Search PW Torch in your podcast app. And Mike, always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime. It was fun.
Excellent. All right. Thanks, everybody else. And we'll talk to you all next time.